Good afternoon, may I please the court. Joe Longus, registration number 33208 on behalf of Mr. Pedro Calzada. Your Honor, I'd like to begin this afternoon with the ineffective assistance of counsel, appellate counsel claim. Your Honor, in Mr. Calzada's direct appeal, the counsel should have raised the issue that there was no basis in fact or in law for Mr. Calzada to be convicted of murder in the second degree. The first reason is that murder, too, is not a lesser-included offense of extreme indifference murder. This is clear by applying the strict elements test, which is a Corn Book law in Colorado. Murder, too, the mens rea of knowingly applies to a specific result, the death of another. With extreme indifference murder, the mens rea of knowingly applies to conduct and circumstances, an awareness that one's conduct creates a grave risk of death. It is, as described by the Colorado Supreme Court, aggravated recklessness. It is not a practical certainty that death will be caused. One can be aware that one's conduct creates a grave risk of death, while still being uncertain that death will occur. And in fact, there is no good reason why a defendant should be able to defend against the charge of extreme indifference murder on the ground that he did not think that death was practically certain.
Counsel, in People v. Rodriguez, did another division not come out the opposite of what you just said?
Yes, Your Honor, they did conclude that, but I would argue that's a rather cursory analysis and is not binding on this court. Really, the issue in that case is whether the jury should be able to deliberate on extreme indifference and lesser includes of that, as well as after deliberation and intent and lesser includes of that in the same case.
And yet, for purposes of ineffective assistance of appellate counsel, that case would have been out there for the appellate counsel to follow, isn't that right?
Well, if he would have, competent counsel would have known that the holdings of one division of this court are not binding upon another.
All right. And is that the only division of this court that is so held?
That's my understanding.
Well, I'm having a little bit of difficulty understanding why it would be necessarily ineffective assistance of counsel to not rely on that pre-existing precedent and to not try to get it overturned. Why is it necessarily ineffective assistance of counsel to not try to get it overturned?
Well, you wouldn't be trying to get it overturned, Your Honor. You'd be trying to get a different result from a division, different division of this court. You would not have to have the decision overturned.
Okay. Your terminology is correct. Mine is incorrect. Nevertheless, do you have any precedent that indicates that it's ineffective assistance of counsel to not try to fight existing precedent?
I don't, Your Honor. And I can look for, and perhaps try to supplement the court with that. But I don't have it. But what I would say is in this case, it's just such an obvious issue that any counsel should have noticed it. I mean, it really, in this case, the judge even brought it to the attention of the attorney in the trial court when there was some argument over whether extreme indifference murder had a mens rea of knowingly with respect to death. He said, well, let me read the statute here. And he goes through the elements of the statute and says knowingly, knowing and aware that your conduct and the circumstances are such that death is likely to occur. And then he reads the last clause that says, and thereby results in death in another. He says, boy, that language, how does one knowingly thereby cause the death of another? It doesn't make sense. He argued, it's pretty clear to me that knowingly doesn't apply to death. And so anyone who would read the record would be cued off that they should argue that knowingly causing death is not an element of extreme indifference, and they should argue that second-degree murder is not a lesser included of extreme indifference murder.
Mm-hmm.
Answer brief, the Attorney General doesn't actually argue that the second degree murder is a lesser included offense of extreme indifference murder. And we don't even make that claim. They just say, well, Jefferson held it was. But they don't wrestle with the law. They don't apply the strict elements test and say that second degree murder actually is a lesser included offense. And so the situation is, how, if it isn't actually, under facts or law, a lesser included offense, then how can a counsel not be effective for failing to argue that? That would be my argument. I mean, if it really, under our Colorado precedent, it is no lesser, then you would be per se ineffective if you didn't argue that it wasn't.
But to follow up on what my colleague was asking you, we'd be effectively saying, although another division of this court found the other way, you were ineffective. Right? I mean, that would be the bottom line for not making the argument that was rejected by the other division.
Yes. You would.
But you don't have any authority for that.
I don't, Your Honor. I don't believe that the people have any authority that, to the contrary, either, though.
Okay.
It may be an open question under Colorado law.
Okay.
And Your Honor, it seems like you're not particularly focused on whether second murder is in fact a lesser included offense. But I would just say, common sense in the case law indicates that it should not be. Because it should not be a defense to extreme indifference murder that you didn't knowingly kill someone. If someone's driving 100 miles per hour in a school zone and they kill someone, they would be aware that their conduct was extremely risky, but they wouldn't be knowingly killing someone. If someone drops a brick off of the public plaza, they are engaging in extremely aggravated, reckless conduct, and they should be aware that their conduct creates a grave risk of death, but they're not knowingly killing anybody. But people who act in that manner should not be able to defend against extreme indifference murder on the ground that they didn't know death would result. They weren't practically certain death would result. They should be found guilty because it was extremely risky and they put many lives at risk. That's at the heart of the extreme indifference murder statute. It actually reaches conduct that's different in kind than second degree murder. Your Honor, even if you believe that second-degree murder is a less-included offense, there's no evidence in this case that Mr. Calzada knowingly killed someone. This is a case that properly went before the jury on a charge of extreme indifference because there was some evidence that he acted with aggravated recklessness, that he caused a grave risk of death. But it's also a case, there's not evidence to support that he knowingly killed somebody. He didn't even knowingly shoot someone. He didn't see anyone when he was shooting his gun. The bullet took a very unlikely path through a fence, a door, before it hit the victim. And there's just no basis for saying that he had the subjective and objective components of the mens rea knowingly with respect to causing death for the person. In fact, he did not, after he shot the bullets, he didn't tell anyone that he'd shot anybody. He said he shot the house. He went there for the purpose of shooting up the house.
Wasn't there some evidence from his friend, however, testimony that he said something to the effect of, we're going to shoot up these people's house, or shoot up those fools?
Your Honor, in the reply brief, I cleared that up. Syntax, is not as too slender a read upon which to hang a conviction for second degree murder. It was very well cleared up that shooting by, say, when the First of all, it's hearsay, and there's some interpretation error there. But when the defendant's friend was saying, he said, "We're going to shoot up these fools," that was the prosecutor's attempt to get elicit testimony that he was actually shooting at the people rather than the house.
Right.
But it was clarified that, yeah, he said he was going to shoot up the house. He was not saying, he never said he was going to shoot up the people. And it's also clear that he could not see anybody at the point he was firing. It was late at night. He couldn't, there was a fence obstructing where he was firing from, obstructing the house from the position where he was firing. He couldn't see in the house. He couldn't see whether someone was inside the house. There's no way for a jury to infer that he knowingly shot somebody.
Well, he was shooting in an area where he knew that the party had taken place, isn't that right?
The party had taken place, yeah.
Right. But I mean a specific area where the party had taken place that was fenced off, and there was a light above it, and he was shooting through that fence where he knew that people had been, right? So he didn't know if they had left or were still there with the fire.
He did not know. You're correct, Your Honor. He had no idea.
That's right.
None. And so that raises a strong probability or contingency of death. That's not knowingly causing death. That's not the mens rea for second-degree murder. It's being practically certain as opposed to the possibility of contingency. It's very clear.
But don't we have other precedent where somebody shoots through a door and they don't know exactly whether there are people standing on the other side of the door, but they kill people as well, even though they couldn't see them through the door?
Your Honor, there are cases from other jurisdictions where someone has immediately slammed the door and the person is standing, the defendant is standing directly in front of the door and immediately fires, or is found that could be knowingly.
Yeah.
But the cases are not generally when someone arrives at a house or returns to a house and shoots into either the door or any part of the house that he has acted knowingly with respect to death. The case is not so whole, and there's no color of precedent that would allow you to make that finding or hold in this case. Very briefly, Your Honor, with respect to ineffective assistance of the trial counsel, what we have here in this case is Judge Ensor granted a hearing on all of Mr. Calzada's ineffective assistance of counsel claims. There was a waiver of confidentiality, waiver of privilege. Counsel had to turn over his entire file to the prosecutor. The defense hired an expert. The case was continued, and finally they got to court for hearing. Another judge then held that he was not entitled to a hearing. Judge Ensor granted a hearing on all of his ineffective assistance of counsel claims. Judge Bryan rejected only one of them based on a misreading of Judge Ensor's order. He really should not have done that. We should be before this case with the facts and findings necessary to litigate this issue. I ask that we return to the trial court so that proper findings may be made. Thank you.
Thank you for your argument, counsel. You may proceed when you're ready.
May it please the court, excuse me, my name is Melissa Allen, registration number 23155. I'm here on behalf of the people. I would submit to this court that this case represents the type of Monday morning quarterbacking that is not allowed under the Strickland standard. Starting with where defense counsel began, I don't know that it's necessary to come for this court to revisit the issue of whether second-degree murder is a lesser-included offense of extreme indifference murder, because what we're here arguing about is whether appellate counsel was ineffective for not making an argument that a division of this court has already said would not be a very good argument to make, because a division of this court has already said that it is a lesser. And I can't even imagine the can of worms that would be opened with ineffective assistance claims if this court were to rule that, despite existing case law, you know, defense counsel needs to be making every valid argument and then every other argument, despite what case law is out there.
Are you aware of any Colorado case law on that point that is that counsel would not have an obligation if there were a precedent on the books, let's say, even if, for example, here, by applying the strict elements test, you might conclude that it's not a lesser included offense?
Well, I'm not aware of anything specific, Your Honor, but I would just point the court to the many cases that deal with the standards of ineffective assistance of counsel as far as, you know, prejudice and poor performance on the part of defense counsel. I think that, you know, hindsight's 20/20, and you can't look back when you're contemplating what people are doing at the time. And I just think that it's wrong. And regardless, I mean, if you do want to discuss it, I would submit that I believe that it is a lesser-included offense of extreme indifference murder. I'd like to talk a little bit about the knowing element of second-degree murder and the evidence that came out at trial. As this court is well aware, when talking about the sufficiency of evidence, it must look at the evidence in the light most favorable to the prosecution, not, as defense counsel was suggesting, basically in the light most favorable to the defense. There was a lot of testimony at this trial that covered the entire evening of this party. It was not merely the defendant pulling up in the middle of the street and shooting at the house. He wasn't mad at the house. He was mad at the people in the house. He had been acting crazily all evening. He was mad. He had pointed his gun at another person who, I might add, was not a confederate of his or a friend of his, but someone he did not know, a Mr. Hagman, who also testified that he heard him say he was going to go home and get another gun and come back and shoot everyone. Not a house.
That's in the record, counsel, that Mr. Hagman testified that defendant said he was going to shoot.
I have from my original answer brief in the direct appeal, volume 8, pages 270 to 71, that he commented on that. And, I mean, I think it's important to note that his own friend, and we don't have to belabor the point, Judge Roman, you pointed this out as well, that he specifically aimed his gun at the back portion of the house where the light was still on, where the party had been going on. He was angry and came back to shoot. And let's assume he kept saying, I'm going to shoot up the house. He knows full well that there are people there, or at least that there were people there. He has no idea that anyone's left, and there's no reason that the jury could not have found that he knew this conduct was practically certain to result in the death of someone if they happened to be behind there and get hit. I think that the evidence was more than sufficient for this finding, and, you know, it's ironic because if trial counsel had not asked for or acquiesced to having second-degree murder being one of the two lessers, along with the manslaughter, we could still be here arguing ineffective assistance, but if he'd been convicted of extreme indifference murder, it would be the opposite argument. The argument would be counsel was ineffective for not asking for second-degree murder. I mean, when you're talking about someone's life being on the line and being in prison, you ask for lessers in order to, you know, hope the jury is not going to come back with extreme indifference. And his conduct may have been closer to extreme indifference murder than second-degree murder because of the callousness with which he shot his gun. But just because they found him guilty of attempted manslaughter on the other charge that was the attempted extreme indifference murder, that does not mean that they would have necessarily found him guilty of manslaughter if there hadn't been a second-degree murder. We don't know, and that's exactly why we don't go back and guess in cases like this. Unless this court has any other questions, I don't know that I have much more to add than to what I had in my briefs.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you. I would ask that you affirm defendant's convictions.
Thank you to both counsel for your arguments and your briefs. Do you have a minute 30 remaining? I'm sorry, counsel. I thought you'd run out of time.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just to respond to some of counsel's arguments. First of all, the evidence was that Mr. Calzada shot at the little main back room. At sentencing, the judge said, as far as mitigating factors in this case, again, the circumstances indicated the defendant fired this weapon into a house. He did not particularly seek out Mr. Thornton and then point the gun at him and shoot him. In fact, said the court, it appeared the defendant wasn't aware that anyone had actually been shot by his indiscriminate acts until later. The trial court is 100% right. And if the court carefully reads the record in the briefs, and where we pointed you to the record in the briefs, you will see that the court is absolutely right. There was certainly a probability of a contingency of death. It was a dangerous act. But there is insufficient evidence that Mr. Calzada knowingly killed another person. And so I ask that this court vacate that conviction. If the court chooses not to, I ask that it send it back to the trial court so we might have the hearing that's required. Thank you.
Thank you, and I apologize for interrupting you, counsel. Thank you to both counsel for your arguments and your briefs. The case will stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course.